Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of your Blackhawks Crazy podcast, even though you're probably getting this in the afternoon on, say, Thursday or later than that. This is really the late night edition of the Blackhawks Crazy podcast, as Scott King and I record following the Blackhawks' first victory under Jeremy Colleton, 1-0 against St. Louis on Wednesday night at the United Center. By the way, Chris Bowden, your pre- and post-game host on Blackhawks Radio. Scott King, your NHL.com correspondent, your Chelsea blogger. And before we dive into this, I might add a very impressive NHL correspondent getting TV love on NHL Now and everything. My question, my Twitter question when you posted that back to you was, how do I get to be an NHL.com correspondent and get on TV to join Jackie and EJ and the guys? And your response was?
Well, I said that. I said you have to be a defending champion United Center press box competitive eater.
And you're wearing the belt.
I am wearing a belt. And you know what? Funny enough,
loosen that belt.
As soon as I walked up to the press box tonight, John Weideman was giving me grief about that. He's like, yeah, you want to go? He's like, I can eat pretty well. Yeah. So,
did you use the gravy boat for? And by the way, I didn't see you during the second intermission as I looked out the radio booth window. Usually you're right there just a few feet down from me, going to town on a plate of something, and it's gravy boat night as well. So I'm guessing you put your gravy boat to action during the second intermission meal, right?
I didn't, because something else happened. Okay. I wanted to put some kind of liquid in the gravy boat and pour it all over myself if you were looking, but I didn't, and you weren't looking anyways. But I treated myself to a little dessert. I don't even know if you saw the little tarts. It was like the chocolate with the raspberry in the middle.
Okay.
I've been good all year. I haven't had candy in a press box all year.
Good for you.
Yeah, I'm trying to work on my figure now that I get
Now you really have the belt since you dived into dessert.
Yeah, I did. You know, I went for it tonight. Had a good week, I guess. So I treated myself and take a bite. I get the raspberry cream all over my face. And then I drop about half of it, chocolate and raspberry, in my lap. So thank God you weren't watching. I was.
Is there videotape of it anywhere?
There might be. Okay. You have to check with the United Center security team. But
no stains on the.
No stains. I made it out alive.
Yeah. It's good to have dark clothes on too. That helps. Right. We're only almost 3 minutes into this. We haven't even talked black. But how did the hit with the gang, the NHL.com gang, go? You had an audience behind you. Too,
good.
Right?
Thank you. Yes. You know, I'm. There's been a lot of big news. Pretty soon they're going to go back to having other people besides me and Lazarus, because it's me and Lazarus almost every Hawks game day so far. I've done three hits. And I'll always say yes. That's why people ask me to do stuff. I almost always say yes, because I enjoy it and I want to do more stuff. But no, I went well. Jackie was telling me after, towards the end of the hit, she's like, oh, there's people behind you. There's a big gathering. So I thought, like, maybe they're waving or something. I turn around and I'm like, oh, you guys. She said, tell them they're on NHL Network. Oh, you guys are on NHL Network. Wave. And they did. They were nice older people watching the, it looked like an old man league with Burrish and Troy were the coaching opposite benches.
Really? I didn't
know
this.
Yes, they did. Wow. It looked fun. And I go to watch the tape later, because I like to put a couple picks after I do TV like that. And these people were just sitting there. You couldn't even see their faces. They weren't doing anything. And I just turn around like a jerk and go, hey, you guys, what are you doing? Wave the NHL. So Jackie had me bother these poor people.
Yeah, they were just trying to watch a game, and but then I saw at the end of the show they do like a three stars thing, and they replayed it, and they put a graphic that was EJ Raddick's fan club behind you. So, all right, now we're 4 minutes in as people scan forward in the podcast
there's slow motion for that
to get to the Blackhawks victory over the St. Louis Blues. And this team continues to struggle scoring goals. I think the numbers now, let's see, 12 goals over the last 25 periods. One goal in the last 9 third periods, which I think covers 74 shots on goal. But the most important thing is they got the zoo animal, your zoo animal of choice, off their backs. Ended this 0-6-2 run and got in the win column. And for all they had been through over the course of the last couple of weeks, I mean, St. Louis started this slump back on October 27th, kind of fitting that the Blackhawks snap out of it against the Blues. And it seemed like a really,
relieved locker room afterwards.
Yeah, it did. And they still need to score more goals. I mean, there was an interesting stat that came out from the Hawks, actually. This was their first 1-0 victory since January 20th of 2017 at Boston. So it's been a long time. They need to score more goals. But, you know, something I said on NHL Network today was I kind of had a feeling that they might win tonight because, you know, you take out that Saturday game in Philly, you throw that in the garbage. And it wasn't as bad as the score suggests, 4-0. But things are trending up. You were getting, you know, traffic to and in front of the net, you know, that Taves tap in on Monday, first goal in Carolina. So you're seeing positive things, and you know, we're only four games in under the Colleton regime. So you know, it's going to take a while, and it's not a whole new system. There's tweaks here and there. The main thing is the defensive zone coverage from zone to man to man. So that's kind of the big focus. But all these little things, I think they're starting to come together, and you saw some good pressure on the power play, and that's why you get that first goal. Even though it was a lucky bounce off Bollmeister's skate, that you had a lot going right on that power play.
And over the course of the last couple of days, you know, as you know, they got a point in Carolina, it was the way I phrase it was a real bad tasting point in Carolina, because you're up 2-0 and boom, it disappeared just like that. And all of a sudden, when teams are on skids like this, it has to weigh on their mind. They just can't play. And Chris Kunitz talked about wanting to, how important it is not to think about the streak when you're trying to break the streak out there on the ice. But I think it's only human nature for it to weigh on guys when things like what happened Monday in Carolina do happen and makes it all the more difficult. But since that game at Tuesday's practice, Wednesday's morning skate, you know, we wanted to ask how are the veterans taking to this new style, this new system? Because that's going to be key for Jeremy Colleton's success. No matter how it looks in the standings, I think we've seen improvement in each of the first four games. It's not perfect by any means, but seeing improvement is a sign that the system or what changes Jeremy Colleton is making are starting to take. And he said he's been impressed by the way the veterans have accepted him. And you and I were talking to Chris Kunitz after the morning skate. I asked him, you know, as a 39-year-old who's 6 years older than this head coach, who's won four Stanley Cups, is what he told us after Tuesday's practice true, that the veterans are truly, you know, invested, wanting to go over that video, wanting to, you know, clarify the tweaks that he's trying to make, both through talking it over and seeing it on video? And he said they're all invested so far, and I think that's the most important first step in trying to make this work.
Something else that came to mind with the veterans is the personnel choices he made. I think the last two games, you're kind of getting back to basics, even though some of these guys are older. You're putting Keith with Seabrook. You're putting Kane and Taves on the same line. It's really interesting, and there had to be something that made him want to try this and keep it together. And yeah, things continue to trend up today. So I think you're going to see it stick. And also, he's leaning on Kane pretty heavy, especially on the power play. Kane's out there for an entire power plays. So it's interesting who he's been leaning on, you know, the leaders, the core guys. Like I said, even though some of them are older, but we'll see what comes of it. He seems to think it's a good idea.
Yeah, and Kane's played at least 22 and a half minutes in all four games so far. But if there's one guy who can probably handle it, it is him. And, you know, trying to have that one go-to line, even though the chances have been there, the production may not. They still need to finish much better. But having that one go-to line is an interesting thought here. And, you know, hopefully Brandon Saad's return, he can get back to playing the way he was in the four or five games prior to his injuries. Maybe he just needs to stay off the practice ice because that's what's really hurting him. But I thought also the DeBrincat, Kampf, and Cahoon line were effective in their own ways too. And that's what he's looking for. He got some criticism over having Kampf and Seabrook on the ice in that overtime Monday. His explanation was, we're going to try some things different. What was working in the past isn't working. And it's not any slap at Joel Quenneville. But having Kampf and Seabrook out there, he thinks even in 3-3, it's important to have a net front presence. He can't keep Taves out there all the time to try to win faceoffs. So that's what led to that situation with Kampf on the ice. He did have an opportunity where a spinorama got away from him, and then Carolina went the other way and scored the overtime goal on Aho. And on penalty killing on Wednesday night, you see Kunitz, you see Martinsson out there, you see Gustav Forsling. As the defensive competition ramps up here with Forsling being brought up, and He's looking for everyone to invest and have a role and embrace it and execute it.
You mentioned Martinson. They're not exactly rolling four lines yet, obviously, but I thought that Martinson and Hayden were a big part of that start to the game. I thought it was an impressive start to the game. You could say definitely the first half of the first period, if not the overwhelming majority of the first period. Hayden and Martinson had some great clean hits. And I actually asked Crawford about that, and he kind of agreed and said that when guys are putting those kind of hits, it helps with the tone. It helps with getting possession of the puck. But also, Crawford said, you know, if you're a D-man, you might not want to be the first guy in the corner after you're seeing, you know, mm-hmm. five, six hits like that. So it wasn't just their physicality. I thought Hayden and Martinson, maybe Hayden especially, had a real good jump. That you know, I started to notice him less as the game went on, but I don't think he made any mistakes. But that first period, he was all over the puck.
Yeah,
I was impressed by him and you know, at least that line. If you can get all four lines playing like that, especially your depth guys, because those first two lines with skill are going to start finding the back end. That'll be a dangerous team to play against soon.
We'll talk a little bit more about Corey Crawford and the defensive effort against the St. Louis team in just a moment. But first, let's hear from Jeremy Colliton Wednesday night after he got his first NHL victory.
Talking about seeing more positives the last game or so, how nice to see the result to go along with it.
Yeah, that was the part of the package that was missing. And so... happy for the guys to get rewarded. You know, it's not a lot of fun to see the, you know, the results add up. So very happy for the group. They battled really hard, I thought, especially in the third when the game was on the line. We found a way to get some pucks out and win some 50-50s and got a couple saves. And hopefully that relieves a little bit of the tension in the team and they can play a little more free, because we've been talking about it, but it's easier said than done.
You get to be happy for the coach too.
I do, yeah. It's true.
Just tell us a little bit about what your feelings were during what they did in the locker room.
I'd rather they, you know, I'm just here to help them, so it's kind of awkward actually, but I do appreciate the gesture. And for me, it's just hopefully we can get some momentum going and build on it.
Was this a good example of how special teams can change the complexion of a game?
It helps your cause, for sure. I mean, I thought we were better on Monday. I thought our game was better Monday. I thought we were really good tonight. You know, did some good things. I thought we made it harder on ourselves than it needed to be at times, but we won the special teams battle, whereas on Monday we didn't. So, yeah, that's correct.
You were talking about getting guys to the net. Andreas Martinson seems to be getting a bigger role. He's on the PK now. What are you seeing out of him?
I just love how he knows when it's time to bear down and win a battle, and he's willing to go through a guy. And, you know, the 2-on-1 we got in the third, I think we got a couple, but the one in particular for Luke Johnson, you know, he just wins a battle. It's just a 50-50. He goes through his defenseman, and not only does the puck get out, but he creates offense, and then all of a sudden we're in their half of the rink, which that's the best way to defend the lead. So we want to – that's part of what he brings. He just he's heavy on the puck. He protects the puck well. He's not going to get a million goals for us, but he adds a lot.
There was a fortunate bounce, but what were some of the other factors that led to that power play goal?
Well, I think actually the second power play is almost a better example of us just being patient, and we don't need to be in a hurry to score a goal. We can move the puck around a few times and stretch the killers and make them collapse and make them resort, and then all of a sudden you get some mismatches at the net, recover a couple pucks. So that was nice to see. We haven't had many power plays. You know, it's going in tonight, we had four in three games. We got another two tonight. So there hasn't been a lot of time to experiment or even get the reps. We worked on it in practice a little bit, but we haven't practiced much. So nice for them to get rewarded, and hopefully that, again, eases a little bit of the tension. When you don't get so many power plays, it's like you get out there finally and, okay, we got to win the game now. And sometimes a little patience is what's needed.
You get a shutout from Crawford. You get a goal at Seabrook from Kane and Hayes. How much was it just incumbent on the big names to make enough plays to release that pressure bubble?
Well, they've been doing it for a while, so I don't think anyone's probably surprised by that. Certainly they're a big part of our team. that's what we want to spread out the responsibility a little bit in our team. We want to build the depth of the group. We want a lot of guys contributing every night, and I think that will allow our other guys who've been around to do even more. So, but yeah, it was appropriate that they came through.
Aside from getting your first win, you got 2 points in regulation.
Yeah.
They didn't get anything, and you beat a division opponent to tell the significance, at least gain 2 points on the Blues.
Right. Well, I mean, first of all, this group needed some good things to happen. They needed it. They needed some reinforcement that, you know, the sun's coming up on this. And so important to get that. And now all of a sudden you can look at the standings, where before you don't look at the standings. You just dig in and try and find a way out of it. And so now we get a little positive vibe and, as I said, try to build on it.
Are we going to make a phone call when you get out of here?
Probably I'll speak to my parents tonight, my wife, you know. But, yeah, it's special. But, you know, it kind of goes along with how the last whatever 10 days have been. We've just been spending every bit of our time trying to get this thing going. And so there hasn't really been time to reflect too much. And, you know, it is nice to win. We'll enjoy it, but it is also back to work.
With the exception of Monday, obviously DeBrincat has cooled off. What are your thoughts on his play tonight?
He made some plays. I thought he created some things. I think that line was really good for us on Monday. They carried a heavy load again tonight. Maybe they weren't quite as good, but they still were out there when the game was on the line. They made some plays. They found a way to get pucks in and relieve the pressure. He can score goals for sure, but part of being a guy who can make a difference offensively is if you defend well, then you're not in your end. You have the puck. You're in the offensive zone. So that will continue to be his the task for him, but I think he's getting better. Despite what the and whatever the results say, the results come is because of the process you go through. So, and that's where that's kind of the path he's on.
I'm sure it's a relief for Jeremy Colleton as well, getting that first victory under his belt, and it helps his group invest in what the message is, finally, you know, seeing results and feeling good about a game afterwards and getting back in the win column. You mentioned Corey Crawford a little bit, and props to him. First shutout since November 1st and 4th, back-to-back shutouts last season, and there was a lot of time and space in between where Corey wasn't even on the ice. But working with that, you know, this St. Louis team, especially, you know, a couple of guys absolutely tore up the Blackhawks in the first three meetings of the year, and for a change, those guys were a lot quieter, and I thought there were a lot more defensive responsibility in this game on Wednesday night. And when there were high danger chances, albeit a lot fewer than what we're used to seeing here, which is, you know, also encouraging, another step in the right direction, Corey was there to make the save.
Yeah, Tyler Bozak talked about the Hawks D tonight. He said they're right up on you, and they take away your time and space, and they actually break out the puck well, which is something that Colleton's been implementing and talking about. You're not seeing the those quick stretch home run passes like maybe Quinville incorporated, but he's given the D a little bit of freedom to break out and carry the puck up themselves. So it's something, another thing that we're talking about is trending upward, is the defense overall, but especially with breakouts and getting into the offensive zone.
Yeah, and perhaps the most shocking thing of all tonight, Wednesday night, Vladimir Tarasenko held off the score sheet for St. Louis because he just absolutely destroys the Blackhawks now for his career. Well, four of his six goals of the season came against the Hawks. Hard to believe he has two and only in 12 games against the rest of the league, but that's what he does against the Hawks. 18 goals, 28 points for his career. The numbers are even better when you chop down the most recent number of games. And O'Reilly, 6 points against the Hawks this season, and his 10-game point streak heading into the Wednesday night game was also snapped by the Hawks. So it says a little bit about what they were able to do. And there's an opportunity here now because you have an LA team, the only other team that has switched coaches here about a week and a half, week or so before Joel Quenneville's dismissal, with, you know, John Stevens being replaced by Willie Desjardins. They've been 0-3 so far under Desjardins. They're starting a 3 or 4 game road trip here, so there's an opportunity, hopefully, to build on something here come Friday night after what's going to be certainly a tough test against a real hot Minnesota team on Sunday.
Well, it's a huge win for a lot of reasons. You're talking about getting animals off your back, not just Colleton's first win. And, he's not a coach who most NHL coaches don't soak up attention, and he's no different. He fits the bill right away, you know, saying that when the players gave him the puck to celebrate the milestone, that it was awkward because he just, you know, he's here for them. He just wants to coach them. So, yeah, he's not a guy that that needs a lot of attention. So I'm sure he likes not having to worry about that first win anymore. It's something you want. You don't just want that zero there. But I think we're going to see more. I think there was a lot of little things that maybe they were overthinking, even though they've all played this game their whole lives, to start doing something suddenly different, that if you're one of these guys that have done it the other way for 10 years, It is hard to kind of start with a clean slate, even though there's some simple fundamental things, and maybe they're just starting to finally get the hang of it now.
Yeah. So we mentioned that Minnesota comes to town on Sunday, and we're not talking about the Vikings and the Bears, who will kick off as probably the third period is winding down at the United Center from the 5 o'clock start. But Sunday is also Hockey Fights Cancer Night, the Blackhawks Hockey Fights Cancer Night. All 31 teams have a home game in which they recognize that it's Hockey Fights Cancer Month for the NHL, and that leads to each team doing it. So the Hawks night is Sunday. We all know about Eddie Olczyk and what he was through over the course of the past year. But one of the newest Blackhawks also experienced going through that illness, and that's Brandon Davidson's played in just 7 games so far after earning a roster spot on a tryout contract during training camp. But when he was just 21 years of age, he got cut among the roster cuts by Edmonton at the time, and then he was getting prepared to join Oklahoma City, their AHL affiliate, going through his regular physicals when it's discovered that he has testicular cancer. And I was able to play this interview as well during the post-game show on Wednesday. We're going to share it with you now as he talks about what was only a 4-month journey for him, but an intense one at that. He talks about which NHL star helped him out during the process that he was going through, and how he tries to help others right now. And I started the interview out by asking what the date he learned about this, October 1st, 2012, means to him.
It just brings back a lot of memories, I think, for myself. It was the beginning of a tough time in my life, but it brings back a lot of good memories in saying that, too.
Mm-hmm. What was the lead up to it? Did it always just come out of the blue?
Yeah, it was something that came out of the blue. Every season, the hockey teams always do physical testing, and they take our blood, and we basically go through a screening process for any of these things in our bodies that would cause us ill, and this was how we found that was through that process.
Mm-hmm. And no premonition, no inkling. You were feeling great leading up to that.
Yeah, I was feeling great. I think when we found it at such an early stage that there was no real side effects going on in my body, and I did have a little bit of discomfort. With that being said, that was just located where the tumor was. Other than that, I mean, no side effects. I was a healthy ox, and I was just starting the beginning of my season. I'd already gone through the NHL rookie camps and kind of made my way down to the minor leagues, and was feeling really good. So, yeah, it definitely came out of the blue.
Mm-hmm. And then when you hear that word, what's it like for a 21-year-old?
Yeah, I mean, it felt like a dream, really. I'd had people around me in my life that have been affected by cancer, and even my family. So, but I just, you feel invincible at that age, and I just never thought that and that would happen to me. So when it was, when that word did come up, it was frightening. It was scary, and it felt surreal.
And you mentioned a family member. You were close to your grandmother, right? And she had gone through it a couple years earlier.
Yeah, my grandmother had gone through it. She was an old lady when she passed away. She lived a full life. So my family had kind of just gone through something like that. We'd just kind of all been still grieving from that process. And when the doctor came in and told me that I had testicular cancer, I was kind of I was in shock and more so scared than anything.
So then the process begins, and what was that process like once we were able to register it? I don't know if you ever accepted it. I don't know if you can accept it when you get that kind of news. But then the process included surgery, chemo, radiation?
Yeah. Yeah, once I kind of took a day or two, because surgery happened so quickly after it was discovered. It was literally 2 days, but kind of downloaded everything from the doc and what he had to say, and understood that this was a very beatable cancer, and my success rate was very high. Kind of went into that with the mindset that we were going to get through this. This was just going to be a period in my life that I was going to have to just battle through and dig down one more time. And I felt like I'd done that in my life and in my career a couple times. So it was nothing I was really afraid of. It was something I was familiar with. So I kind of found some comfort in that and knowing that. And once I kind of, or once we began the process, yeah, we got the tumor removed. And once I was able to recover from that surgery, which was about a month's time, we started chemotherapy. We did a 23-day cycle out of 1 month. We didn't go every day, but we did do 23 days out of the 28-day cycle, and we were able to attack it very aggressively. It was a more aggressive cancer, so the approach was more aggressive as well, and we were able to kind of get rid of all the cancer cells that way. And once I was able to get those 26 days done with, I just had to recover. I had to get healthy. I lost about 30 pounds, and I had to get that weight back. I had to get my strength back, and that took about another 2 months. So from the beginning of surgery all the way to the end, when I returned back to the East Coast Hockey League, actually I returned back to the American Hockey League and played a few games as a forward, but essentially returned to the East Coast Hockey League was about 3 months' time.
Wow, that's amazing. And we've noticed since you've been with the Blackhawks, a great head of hair, too, so you beat that.
Yeah, you know, I never really had long hair, and it's ever so fitting, I think, this month, just to show
show the flow
and you know, just, I don't know, just my little statement.
I read in looking back on this and had completely forgotten when Phil Kessel got into this league too, back in 06 or something like that. He had to deal with it, and did you have some communication with him too?
Yeah, I had some communication with him. I had known his story before, and I knew that he had kind of gone through something similar. Ours are a little bit different, where he just had to do a surgical procedure to remove his without no chemo. But nevertheless, I'd known he'd gone through something like that, and he'd reached out and just kind of eased my mind, let me know that I was going to get through this, and that you know, everything was going to be okay. And you know, at the time I was a young kid just getting into a professional hockey career, and you know, those words meant everything to me, and really really just something I'll never forget.
And obviously you previously had a respect factor for Brian Boyle, but even more so now, because he's the most recent person here in the league to have gone through something like this.
Yeah, I mean, respect, yeah, is to say the least. Just my heart goes out to what he had to go through, and for him and his family to have, you know, overcome that and to see the success he's having is really just, it's really just a beautiful thing.
And, but between yourself and Kessel and Boyle, as we go through this month, how much and for what this sport has done to raise awareness, how much does that, you know, strengthen and embolden you in terms of passing the message along?
Yeah, I, the league has done an amazing job at this month in particular, and promoting men's health and promoting the success that guys like Castle Boyle and myself have had in these situations. And you know, the message for me is that you're not alone, that we're all in this together. I think that the hockey community is a smaller community, and that you know, the way we can reach out and touch other people's lives and ease their pain is what the goal is here. And I think that moving forward, that you'll see our league and our players in it really act on it.
Mm-hmm. And as you spread that word too, what's life been like with you since in terms of follow up? And I'm sure it's always in the back of your mind to a certain degree. And with each follow up that you get that's positive, it builds a little bit more strength and positivity.
Yeah, with the follow ups, I'm 7 years cancer free now. I haven't had any blips, if you will say, at all. So I get a checkup every year, and sometimes I do get a second checkup. I know sometimes it plays with my mind or sort of thing, but I've been cancer free, and you know, I've never been happier, and I'm still here, and I'm still playing hard, and I'm loving every minute of it.
Yeah. And if you had a final message, and I'm sure, you know, our good friend Eddie O too, with what he went through a year ago at about the same time Brian Boyle did, although Eddie's was a little bit more extensive in terms of his treatments, and you know, we're so thankful that he's back here with us. I'm sure you and Eddie O and everybody else kind of have a similar message to everybody that's out there who, you know, in terms of prevention and in terms of coping for those who may have got the news you did when you were 21.
Yeah, I think it's important that, especially this month, just the raising awareness. I really emphasize to get checked and to take that opportunity just to be safe and to make sure you're taken care of. Take care of yourself first and foremost. And I think to anybody out there who's battling cancer or going through it with a family member, that you're not alone. I think the support from your family and friends is everything, but there's also people in different parts of the world that are here for you, and you know, just want to extend that message that we're all in this together.
Brandon Davidson, real great guy, and his roster status, maybe as we speak, you know, may have changed now with some decisions having to be made with Marcus Kruger coming off injured reserve and Forsling now up. Connor Murphy, you know, he may be coming back over the next couple of weeks. But for the here and now, Brandon Davidson, really solid guy, and you learn a little bit more about what his journey has been like and what he has been through in order to keep a career going here in the NHL. Let's wrap up real here. Do you have any more TV gigs you're doing? Because I mentioned the NHL network thing. So I'm turning on, well, I saw your warning tweet first on last Sunday evening about appearing on and Channel 5 Sports Sunday.
Oh, yes.
But yes.
Thank you for watching.
And I did watch. It was good to see you, but whether that's one of the last things I want to see before, no offense. I'm joking. So any more TV gigs in your future here?
No, I think, you know, I kind of feel like
you have your own show or anything?
Well, so I'm hoping for it now. I'm just going to take a break because I don't have any offers right now, but
well, they're coming.
Oh yeah, I know. It's been a lot, so it's it'd be good to just kind of focus on writing and podcasting for a little bit.
And speaking of which, we probably, since the Blackhawks, you know, they'll probably practice on Tuesday before Washington on Wednesday. They're on the road for a 3-game trip there. They go to Florida for games against the Panthers and Lightning the Friday and Saturday after Thanksgiving. So since they're going to be out of town, I'm not sure whether we'll be able to chance to do something until after Thanksgiving. We certainly want to wish everyone a very happy Thanksgiving, safe, sound food, that too. But as we look at things right here, Blackhawks 19 games in, 18 points after snapping that skid, and you look at the rest of the wild card situation in the West. Colorado wins over Boston on Wednesday night, so they own the first wild card. 21 points, though. Blackhawks are just 3 points behind them. Colorado owns, rather, Dallas owns the second wild card spot at 20. And even though there's a little bit of differential in games here, and the schedule is brutal. Is brutal coming up between Thanksgiving and all the way through the Winter Classic, when they play Boston in South Bend. Getting back on track here, building a little bit of belief is encouraging. And if they can continue elevating their play, finding ways to score goals while strengthening themselves defensively in the system, they got to take it a game at a time, but at least they've given themselves a little bit more hope after this game on Wednesday night.
Yeah, there's some hope. I mean, look at how tough the Central is again. Yeah. It's like, right, it seemed like there was a season or two where we're not talking, that we knew it's difficult, but not the toughest division. It's the toughest division again, I think. It's so hard to keep up with the teams there. And yeah, like I said, things just need to keep trending up. There is some hope. There was a lot to learn or go back to doing or get used to, and I think, you know, just one goal, but I think it was a result of doing things under Jeremy Colleton the way he's been asking for them to do it, and good on the Hawks for, you know, backing up what they were saying when he got the job, is they were open to listening and his systems of doing things, and like you said, they've been watching video and I think the ears and eyes have been open, so yeah. Hopefully
and no angry Blackhawk Twitterverse, we're not saying this team is definitely going to the playoffs or heading to the Stanley Cup. All we're saying is, yeah, they've put themselves in an unenviable position after getting 2 points over 8 games, because that's going to kill you in this division and in this conference. But only a couple teams have run away, and I think it's kind of the teams you expected in the Central who are going to have a stranglehold. I mean, maybe some thought Colorado in lieu of Minnesota, but again, there's opportunity here if they can keep improving, and just stay competitive in that pack somewhere. Before we sign off, speaking of Thanksgiving dinners, what's your favorite little thing in your Thanksgiving dinner? Your favorite, is it stuffing? Is it the turkey itself? Cranberry?
I'm a pretty big traditionalist with Thanksgiving. I like the turkey, and I'm not big on stuffing. I like turkey and gravy, and my grandma makes these really nice rolls. And we do double duty, so we'll go to my grandma's house, my dad's side of family, my aunts will be there. So we have lunch with them, and then we go closer to you there in Orland Park for dinner with my wife's family.
Two meals,
two huge meals. Maybe I'll send you a video, because we're not going to see each other for a while.
Right. I'm just thankful. My mother-in-law, I take care of the dishes afterwards, and putting things in the dishwasher. That's my responsibility. Just sit there and stuff myself. So, and I used to hate stuffing as a kid, and now I love stuffing. Now I love dressing. So.
Some people are like, they talk about different kinds of stuffings they're going to use. And right. Have you tried the White Castle stuffing? It's actually not bad.
No. I think my mother-in-law has tried that or used that in the mix at some point.
It's good.
Yeah. I'm all for it. Okay, that's our Blackhawks / food crazy podcast heading into Thanksgiving. If you want to follow along on the Blackhawks Crazy Facebook page at facebook.com/Blackhawks Crazy, they'll give you everything from Scott's Chelsea Blogger blog. Maybe it'll include some video clips soon as well from all the television work he's doing. You can also follow me and Scott on Twitter as we kind of poke fun at ourselves too. I'm at @BowdenTweets. Scott's at Scott King Media. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave a review. It's the easiest way to notice something new is there. It'll just pop up when it's ready. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks again to Super Joe Romano for piecing this all together. Joe deserves a nice Thanksgiving dinner as well. I hope he's got that coming too. So with the schedule being as it is, we'll probably not talk to you again on a pod until maybe the Monday after Thanksgiving, as the Blackhawks prepare to host Vegas, or maybe after that Vegas game. We'll keep you posted, but one way or another, expect one early that week after Thanksgiving. And enjoy your holiday, everyone, and Black Friday, too. Blackhawks with Washington after finishing out this homestand. Washington Wednesday to face the defending Stanley Cup champs. And then they are off to the Florida two-step against the Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning. For Scott King, I'm Chris Bowden. Thanks for listening. Have a great Thanksgiving, everyone.